right, my party people, my little oogla boogalas, welcome to the podcast, Weekend Sports Rep Podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in this week. We're going to talk about a couple different things. We're going to talk some NBA playoffs. We're going to talk some hockey. We're going to talk some hockey, ladies and gentlemen. I've been watching a little bit of the playoffs, been trying to tune in as much as possible, and I'm going to give you some observations as a casual puck observer, not a huge, massive NHL, not necessarily a fan, just not a huge observer of the NHL. I don't watch it very often, but I do. Whenever we get to playoff time, there's really, truly, the saying is there's nothing like hockey, NHL playoffs. There's really not. It's a fun experience to watch some NHL playoffs, so I've been watching that, been watching the first round of those games, and I'm going to give you some observations as a casual puck observer, and I'm going to, you know, you guys are going to roast me. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that either. NFL draft just happened. Some quick reactions for the NFL draft, and the NFL playoffs going on as well, and some reactions to that. As well, going to leave out maybe the MLB just a little bit, not a whole lot going on there. I would say that's too entirely intriguing. Some underachievers, obviously, in terms of expectations. Houston Astros not playing very well, but I think for the most part, there hasn't been a hugely, trying to think to myself here, massively over expected thing, other than I think the Astros really underachieving has kind of surprised a lot of people. But other than that, I think it's kind of gone the way we expected. I mean, the White Sox are terrible. They're truly, truly, truly awful. But that was kind of expected. Maybe not as bad as they are, because they're truly, truly awful. But, you know, I think everybody kind of expected them to not be very good in the AL Central. And they started off this year by dealing Dylan Cease as well. And that seemed like they were already waving the white flag heading into the season. So, you know, not necessarily unexpected, but, you know, nobody expected them to be as bad, I think, as they have been. So, you know, there's your MLB. And it's still early, obviously. It's only May. We're heading into May. We still got about 3 months left of the season. So plenty of time to talk MLB. So we're going to stick to NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, a little NFL draft as well, because it's the big thing in the middle of the offseason for the NFL. And yeah, we'll get started.
Hey, Kathleen, you know how they say homegrown is always better? You know, like homegrown beef, vegetables, and eggs?
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
Well, you know that the owners of 307 Real Estate were born and raised in Wyoming. And 307 Real Estate is a Wyoming-based company, so I guess you could call us homegrown?
Yes, I would agree to that. We do know Wyoming and what we stand for, family, community, and country.
List your property with Kathleen and Jack and get it under contract. We are 307. We are Wyoming. 307 Real Estate, 307-763-1249.
So, something that I have observed over the first few, it hasn't been a couple weeks already in the NBA playoffs. It's only been about a week and a half, I think. I think the first game started last, I guess, if you count play-in tournament as playoffs, but they don't even count the stats as those as playoff games, so we can't count the play-in as playoffs. So, basically since last Friday, I guess is what I would say, two Fridays ago. So, a little bit over a week and a half. So let's start there. Something that I've noticed as a Thunder fan, big Oklahoma City Thunder fan here, been riding with that team since 2009. I think they moved there 2008 when I was 2007, maybe. I think 2007 and 2009 is really when I switched over, was like, okay, I've got family in Oklahoma, want to start becoming a fan of a team. Thunder make a lot of sense. Could go to games possibly if I ever go back. Whenever I went down to Oklahoma, there was a possibility. You'd watch a lot of Thunder games, obviously. Been to Thunder games. So that has been my team since I was a wee lad. And this year is really the first time since Kevin Durant left, essentially, which would have been 2015, I think. Either 2015, 2016, the offseason of 2015, 2016. We actually have hope for the first time in terms of true contender class hope of competing for a championship. I don't know if they're going to make a championship. I don't know if they're going to win the championship per se, but you know, there's the reason to believe for Oklahoma City. And I think I haven't seen much of a heel, like I haven't seen a heel turn happen as quickly from fans. Cause I think most of the fandom of the NBA. You know, people that are watching NBA basketball pretty prominently like this Thunder team because they're young, they're having fun. They're not really, you know, going about it in a obnoxious way, if that makes sense. They're kind of sticking to themselves, but they're clearly having fun and they like to play together. But there was a heel turn. There was a very obvious heel turn for, I think, a lot of fandom. And it all stemmed from one commercial, a single commercial. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren in a commercial together for AT&T. And they're singing the What a Pro Wants, What a Pro Needs song as they're going to a bus, seemingly their team bus or whatever. And that ad, I love the Thunder. I love both of those players, obviously. But I can understand where people are starting to be like, okay, this is enough, because they play that ad seemingly every single ad break during the NBA playoffs. And I cannot, I mute it every single time. I'm like, I can't do this. It is so frustrating and so annoying. And it's not frustrating, it's too strong of a word. It's just annoying. It's just an annoying ad. Okay. Those guys, they might not even know the song. It's a nod towards Christina Aguilera's song, What a Girl Wants, that was released in 2009, I think, way back then, which was when I was like, I graduated 2015. I would probably been that would have been when I first became a Thunder fan, essentially, a long time ago for me anyways. And you want me to really blow your mind? Chet Holmgren, who is the other player in that opposite Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I called him Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I've heard people call him Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. That's why I said that. But he's my king, MVP. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the opposite of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in that advertisement. Chet Holmgren, he would have been 7 years old when that song was released. He was born in 2002. So I don't even know if they know what song they're really singing. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't really know. I'm not going to disrespect them that way. Christina Aguilera, an absolute icon in the music industry. So I don't know. Maybe they have heard of that song. But man, I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. I want that advertisement to be off of my television just for future reference. I don't need it anymore. Okay. And it's making people hate the Oklahoma City Thunder, even though there's no reason to hate them other than the fact that the advertising campaign that is built around them is just really annoying. And they could not have picked a worse ad to be on together than that one. I would have picked anything else. I remember when I was growing up as well, Sprint, I think it was, had an advertisement with Kevin Durant right when the Thunder were beginning to pop off as well. And it was, I don't know if it was, it may have been Sprint. It was another cell phone company. I remember that very clearly. And it was a want to be in my Framily is what it was called. Framily. And they were selling like a plan to be part of, you know, a package for a cellular plan or whatever as part of the deal. And it was a Framily plan. And Kevin Durant was just going around asking people if they wanted to be part of his Framily or whatever. And it was a little bit funnier, but it kind of, I think, irked people the same way. It was like, all right, we've seen this ad 14,000 times now. We don't need it. We don't need this ad anymore. And that's one of the observations I will keep, because I have a list here of observations that will, you know, I'm bleeding into hockey here. One of the observations I will say about what I've seen so far, and this is outside looking in for observations, the advertisements they have for some of these hockey games are actually really funny. Like there's the one about the couple or whatever that are Colorado Avalanche fans, and they've been Colorado Avalanche fans for, you know, 10 years or whatever it was, and they've been together for 10 years. And every single year they'd watch the Colorado Avalanche playoffs together, but every single year they'd lose, but they didn't care because, you know, they loved watching the Avalanche together. And then the one time they were apart, the Avalanche won the Stanley Cup for the first time since they were together, and they were apart at that point. And then the realization happens, and then they decide to break up because they think it's affecting how the Avalanche are playing. And when they break up, they end up playing better, that sort of thing. A funny advertisement. It's not very funny when I'm explaining it to you, obviously, but anybody who's been watching hockey knows what I'm talking about. That's a good ad. Well done. Funny. Kept me in the moment. It caught me off guard because I was like, wait, what? They're breaking up? That's kind of funny, kind of messed up. But you know what? Fair enough. Fandom makes you do stupid things, whatever. The other one is the Walrus playing goalkeeper, soccer. I apologize. I messed that up. Goaltender, goalie for a team. And I think it's like a Geico ad or something like that, or a banking ad or something. The Walrus is just in goal and they're trying to shoot at the Walrus. And obviously it's not going past because Walrus are like 13 feet. It's a pretty funny ad. It's well done. well-scripted, you know, whatever. So I will say, for whatever reason, the hockey ads, they've nailed the hockey ads. They've done it very well. None of the NBA ads have really stuck with me, though. I'm like, I don't remember any of these. Like, I remember we were getting hit with classics back in the day that became meme potential, especially. And I will say the ones that happen now where it's like, I think it's Chris Rock who's voicing it. And it's like, hey, is playoff Jason Tatum a thing? And it's Jason Tatum saying, no, it's not a thing. And that is 1000% going to become a meme if the Celtics don't win the NBA championship, or if he struggles in the playoffs at some point. That is 1000% going to become a thing where he's like, you know, somebody's going to meme it of him saying, no, Jason, playoff Jason Tatum's not a thing. And, you know, he has a bad game. They're going to clown him over that. But I remember the older Gatorade commercials that we used to see where we see like Kevin Durant and he's having like a nightmare or something like that. And it's of Dwayne Wade or LeBron James going in for a dunk or whatever. And he'd wake up in like a cold sweat. Like, that ad was like iconic, especially for the meme potential of Kevin Durant waking up in a cold sweat. Like, everybody remembers that ad. So I don't know. The NBA ads have been just kind of not great so far. And it's gotten to a point where people are angry at the NBA ads because they're angry at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren because of the ad, because it's not very good and it's just annoying. And it is. It's very annoying. I agree. I 1000% agree with that. I think it is an annoying ad. It's not memorable. Actually, the people who are watching it, I don't even know if they even know what the advertisement's for. They just see the part where they're both kind of singing together and then they forget about it. I don't know if most people, if you ask them, the people who've seen that ad, NBA fans who have seen that ad, if you were to ask them what that advertisement is for, I wonder if they would be able to know the answer to that question. Because I was going to say, a lot of advertisers are probably like, all right, they hate it, but that's, you know, any publicity is good publicity. But not if you don't know what the advertisement's for. I think it's for AT&T, if I remember correctly. I think it's for AT&T because they also do a similar one with Carmelo Anthony and Kendrick Perkins that is, I think, of similar, like the similar saying or whatever. So I think it's an AT&T ad. But for the most part, I don't think most people know what that ad is for, which is not necessarily a good thing if you are the advertiser. But anyways. Yeah, people are turning against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren because of the advertisement that they put out that's been playing, and rightfully so, because it's literally playing in every break, and it is really annoying if you're hearing it back to back to back to back all the time. Fair enough. It's a fair enough observation that you don't like it anymore. Whatever. I appreciate it. Fair enough. Whatever. Go Thunder, though. All right, let's move on. Actual observations. Talked about the advertisements for the NHL, the playoffs, done very well. I think they're pretty funny for the most part, and they're well scripted out. Let's go ahead and get to the actual observations of the on-the-ice stuff. Number five, less fights than I would have thought. So, from my understanding, one of the most viral clips that happened in the NHL this year was the clip of the Rangers, I believe, and the Islanders, both New York teams, obviously. And like right at the beginning of the game at puck drop, everybody dropped their gloves and then just started fighting each other. And that was what happened in that the very, very beginning of that game. They just dropped their gloves and they're like, all right, let's go. Let's fight. We're going to fight. And that's what happened. And that was probably the most viral clip of the NHL this year. So going into the playoffs, I was like, okay, we're going to see a bunch of fighting. Like, this is what's going to happen. A bunch. There's going to be a ton of fighting. These people are going to knock their gloves off and just go toe-to-toe with one another. And again, you know, I'm not unfamiliar with the game of hockey, with the NHL. Obviously, it happens every now and again, but it's not that frequent. But it's even less frequent in the playoffs, which makes sense because you're not going to put your team behind just because of fighting in the playoffs where every second counts essentially in the playoffs, in the NHL, especially, you know, playoff time, obviously, because you can't be giving up 4-minute power plays just because of fighting in the playoffs, especially because every second counts in the playoffs. You need those extra guys. You need to be 5-on-5 at all times, essentially. And anytime you're in a power play in the playoffs, it is a dangerous opportunity for said team to make one goal that potentially brings them closer or gives them a bigger lead. So less fights than I would have thought, but it makes sense after I've been watching it for a while over the last couple of days, more and more hockey. I'm like, okay, this makes sense. Power plays are truly the most dangerous time. If you're on defense, obviously on offense, the most opportune time to score. So less fights, you know, not necessarily it surprised me at first, obviously, but then afterwards I was like, okay, this makes sense. You're not going to just give the opposing team an advantage because you two wanted to fight or anything like that. You know, I've seen, I think, a couple, and there could be more. I've been paying attention to about three or four series that I have been watching. There's eight total series going on right now, I think. And I've only been really paying attention to four of them. The Avs one, the Panthers Lightning one, because that's a pretty big rivalry, obviously. The Edmonton one, and they're taking on the Kings, if I remember correctly. And then I've been watching on and off the Dallas Stars and the Golden Knights one as well. So haven't been necessarily paying attention to every single one, but from the ones that I did see, I think I only saw one fight actually happen, one fight actually commence. And that was less than I would have expected coming into the playoffs. I thought we were going to see maybe not a fight every game, but maybe a fight every other game. And it's been less than that. It's been one fight that I've seen total since I started watching. So surprising to me. That was surprising. Number four, I have no idea how the announcers of these games, the play-by-play commentators, are able to follow the game. I have no idea how they do it. It is truly unbelievable how they're able to, one, keep track of the players that are on the ice, because when they're changing mid-game. There's no stoppage in play. So when they're changing, they're substituting. It's happening on the ice in that moment, and they're having to correct them. I have no idea how they do it. It's unbelievable. I don't think I'll ever, because I am a, not trying to, not really, I guess it's not really a brag or anything like that, but I'm an aspiring commentator, play-by-play person. I like to do games. I just got off a weekend of doing four baseball games. I like to commentate baseball. It's very slow, which some people would step away from. Some people like to have it slow. I like it. I like baseball because it is slow. Kind of allows you to catch up a little bit. But hockey, I have no idea how they do it. Literally no idea how they do it. I have no idea how they keep track of the people who are on the ice and who are off the ice. No idea how they do it. Not to mention the thing they're watching, the little biscuit, as they say, the frozen biscuit, the puck, is like yay big compared to where, you know, from where they are up on the media area versus down on the ice. It's got to be so tiny. I have no idea how they see it. They probably have monitors, obviously, but still, just I don't know how they keep track of that stuff. It blows my mind that a lot of those play-by-play announcers, and the, you know, obviously these are the best of the best, the TNT announcers, the ESPN announcers, they're not going to make very many mistakes because they're very good at what they do. But I just, it blows my mind that they're able to keep track of who's on the ice at any given time and who's scoring the goals and whatnot, how they're able to see like the tip-ins and whatnot. It just blows my mind. It amazes me at how good they are at what they do. And there's people that do multiple, like people that do, I've heard, I think Marv Albert a couple times, maybe it might be Ian Eagle who's also doing it, but he does basketball. He does some baseball. He does some hockey as well. And then football as well. Just crazy how talented these guys are. And I have no idea. Hockey's got to be the hardest one, I would have to imagine. If I were to ask them, I would have to imagine that hockey is the hardest one to do because of how fast paced it is. And then just how everybody's changing not in the middle of the game and not during timeouts or anything like that during the stoppage in action. There is changing during stoppages, obviously, but you know, you'll see lines change during the game where there's just, you know, the puck is behind the net or something like that in the defensive end. And then they just make a switch on the lines and you have to keep track of all this stuff. No idea how they do it. It blows my mind that they're able to keep up with that stuff. Number three, more goals than I would have expected from playoff hockey as well. There's been a ton of goals in these first couple of games that I've watched. The first game of the Winnipeg Jets versus the Colorado Avalanche game, or the first game of that series, it was like 7-6 at the final. And Winnipeg came in, according to what I was listening to, as one of the best defensive teams in the entire NHL. And the Avalanche just went out there. And from what I understand as well, Avalanche, one of the better offensive teams in the NFL as well. Nathan MacKinnon probably going to win the Hart Trophy, I think is the name of it. Also, another observation, don't name your trophies, okay? From the outsiders looking in, nobody knows what the Hart Trophy is. I think the Hart Trophy is the MVP. I'm pretty sure it's the MVP. And I think Nathan MacKinnon is kind of the favorite to win the Hart Trophy, but just call it the MVP. Nobody knows what, if you're not nobody, but if you're an outside looking in, nobody know, like the outsiders have no idea what you're talking about when you talk about the Hart Trophy. Just call it the MVP. Everybody knows what an MVP is. I understand that. That's easy. There's an MVP in every single sport. I don't understand why they do that with the trophies. It's really confusing and makes it hard for everybody else to understand. And I get some of the hockey people, they're like, look, we don't want outsiders coming in. This is our game. But that's not how you grow your game. Ladies and gentlemen, guess what? You grow your game by having easy to follow MVPs, offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year. It's very obvious what it is. Anyways, more goals than I would expect it. And the Hockey's, or the Avalanche are able to score just at will, just whenever they want against the number one rated defensive team in the entire league. And it's not just the Avs and the Jets. The ton of goals in the Panthers series as well. Panthers versus Lightning series. Been quite a few goals in the Edmonton series as well against the Kings. I think they're playing the Kings. I keep mixing it up. But a lot of goals in that series as well. They got one of the better players as well, in Connor McDavid, on Edmonton's team. So just happening, a lot more goals happening in that series, in those games, than I would have expected. I always thought playoff hockey, I thought defensive, you know, we're not going to see very many goals. And there have been some spurts here and there, like the Avalanche versus the Jets, I think had one game in there that was like 2-1, 3-1 or something like that, if I remember correctly, or one of the games that I was watching finished that way. But for the most part, it's been pretty high scoring affairs from everybody that I have been watching. So a little surprising there. I thought there would be a lot more defensive effort. And from what I understand, also, like the, It's usually how it goes. The hot goalie going into the playoffs is usually like the biggest advantage that you can have outside of the power plays, obviously, but those are timed. But if you can go into a series having a hot goalie, somebody who is really making a lot of saves, then you are not necessarily the favorite to win everything, but it puts you at a great advantage over a lot of the other teams, obviously. And that is a, and it doesn't even matter who it is necessarily. Like Vasilevsky for the Lightning has been one of those people that can just turn it on during the playoffs. And that's why the Lightning have been a perennial powerhouse in the NHL over the last few years. And it seemingly can just kind of change depending on how they're feeling going into the playoffs. So interesting. Anyways, number two on the list, golden goal overtime. That is the absolute best version of overtime in hockey. Obviously, that makes a lot of sense. Soccer sometimes does it. There's some places that don't do it. I think like some of the Mexican leagues and South American leagues, I believe, do golden goal overtime. But like the European League in like the EPL, the English Premier League, they don't do, I mean, obviously they just do ties and everything in regular season games. But like for the FA Cup and stuff like that, and I think the Champions League and whatnot, they do like 30 minutes of extra time. And then if no score by then it's overtime. But if you score in the extra time period, the extra time still goes on to allow the other team to answer as well. But the golden goal stuff for the NHL, that is the absolute best way to do it, especially in playoffs. It adds this kind of edge to everything that's happening in overtime. And I think in the regular season, they do 3-on-3 as well. In playoffs, it's 5-on-5 in overtime. But in the regular season, I think they do 3-on-3, which is, that's got to be bananas. Can you imagine doing like NBA overtime and you can only have three people out on the court at a time? Like a 3-on-3. That'd be insane. But the NHL, the golden goal stuff, it is perfect. I love the fact that it's golden goal. And then obviously if you go into finish off overtime and nobody scored, then you go to penalties, which is also a great way to do it as well. In my opinion, I love penalties. They're not called penalties in hockey. They're called penalties in soccer. I apologize. But you know, the one-on-ones essentially, 1v1, one offensive man, I guess, versus the goalkeeper, not a penalty, but similar idea, I guess. But the golden goal stuff is so cool. It makes for so many like cool highlights at the end of games, and that feeling of a sort of a walk-off slash buzzer beater that you can't really get in hockey typically in a timed game like that, except at the buzzer. But in it being a golden goal, first goal wins, it kind of creates that same sort of feeling, even though you're not beating the clock necessarily, and it makes it feel more like a walk-off that you get in baseball as well. But I think it's super, super cool. And it makes for all the really cool highlights. And again, everything that happens in like the offensive area for both teams feels like, and if you're like somebody that's rooting on for the defense and the offensive area, every shot feels like it's the last shot of the game and vice versa. And I think that's such a cool kind of constructed feeling to have from hockey. I think that's such a smart way to do it. I'd be curious to see how most people feel about it, because it is kind of a big leaping change versus how the game is happening, especially in the regular season. If they're doing 3-on-3 golden goal, it's got to be, I'm curious to see how hockey fans feel about it, because like that drastic change from how everything feels during the normal game where it's 5-on-5, you know, you got a time limit, so forth, And then once you switch to overtime, especially in the regular season, it's 3-on-3 and it's golden goal. First goal wins. And then after the end of that in the regular season, it's just, it ends up as a tie. But in playoffs, obviously, you switch and go to the 1-on-1s and whatnot. But I'd be curious to see what their thoughts are. If they don't like the golden goal, if they do like golden goal. But from, you know, an outsider's perspective, I'm like, this is one of the coolest overtimes in professional sports. Maybe even the coolest with the golden goal. There's not many constructed overtimes that I'm like every, and you know, the NFL is kind of a disaster, but the extra innings rule, I think the MLB does, is pretty cool. But the golden goal for the NHL, I think, is the premium version of it, where it's just, you know, hey, this is it. If it goes in, you lose. Or if you're on offense, if it goes in, you win. Bing, bang, boom. That's it. That's all you really need to know. And then the game's over. And I think that's cool. I think it keeps everything on edge. And it's a nice way, especially in the playoffs. Like, it's got to be insane in the playoffs, that feeling, especially in like in the arena. Just the feeling of every single shot matters a lot more, because if it goes in, it's over. It's all over. Like, so that's got to be electric. And that leads into my number one, electric atmosphere. I always kind of knew this was the feeling, but man, so like the Winnipeg, because this is like the first time in the playoffs in a long time from what I understand, and the atmosphere that you're getting in Winnipeg is unreal. And a lot of these stadiums, these arenas have electric atmospheres for these hockey teams. They're big time hockey fans, obviously, in Colorado, in Toronto, obviously, the Yankee Stadium of hockey, if you will, where it has all this treasured past, but really haven't done anything in recent memory apart from, you know, the Yankees are a little bit different. They won in 2009, but before that, I mean, and well, not before that, I'm sorry, for the Maple Leafs before that, I mean, it's basically the father telling their children at this point how great the Maple Leafs used to be, but they're not really that anymore. And they haven't been that in a very long time. So, the atmosphere is just very, very cool. And even from like Florida teams, which, you know, Tampa Bay has kind of been the quote unquote dynasty over the past decade, from what I understand, in hockey, which is wild. Like, you can't, I can't imagine a place, like if you were to ask somebody, hey, this is what hockey is. If you were to pick an American place that you would expect hockey to kind of be the capital of in terms of professional sports, where do you think it would be? I think a lot of people would say the last place they would think of would be Tampa Bay and or Florida in general. And seemingly the Panthers are one of the best teams in the NHL this year, one of the favorites to win the Stanley Cup this year. And the Tampa Bay Lightning have been one of the best teams in the NHL over the last decade. So it's weird how they kind of created, they've constructed a little hockey mecca, if you will, quote unquote, in the weirdest place in Florida of all places, in Tampa Bay, and right now in Florida, who are now one of the favorites to win the NHL, the Stanley Cup. And not to mention, Florida was the President's Cup trophy like 3 years ago, President's Cup trophy winner like 3 years ago, which is the best record in the regular season. I think they got knocked out by Tampa Bay in during that season regardless, but still, like, a weird, random hotspot for like really good hockey has been Florida, which if you asked any normal person, I don't think they would be able to guess that. I think they would think Minnesota, Canada, obviously. And then the defending Stanley Cup champions as well, Vegas, of all places, the Vegas Golden Knights. So it's just interesting. It's odd that you get a weird draw for it from these places, or like a good, you know, you're getting good teams from the places you wouldn't expect hockey teams to come from, in Tampa Bay and Florida, Vegas, obviously, as well. So, yeah, odd. Arizona, too, but Arizona is seemingly moving to Utah in the future. But Arizona is one of those places as well. Arizona, the birthplace of Austin Matthews, who plays for Toronto, one of the better hockey teams in the NHL as well. So, interesting. I just think it's all very odd. But as a casual puck observer, it's all been very good. It's been very fun to watch. Electric in a lot of these places, and just seemingly a lot of really cool things happening. I still don't know if I'll watch a lot of regular season hockey, to be honest with you. I might just be a adamant playoff hockey person, because it's been fun to watch during the playoffs, and it's kind of fun to flip back and forth from NBA playoffs to NHL playoffs, just still kind of keeping that momentum going in terms of the importance of the games and whatnot. And, you know, there's nothing really better than playoff anything, just playoff baseball, playoff football, playoff hockey, playoff basketball. There's nothing that could really match it. So switching from that to the regular season in any sport is still kind of hard. And I don't really have a team necessarily in the NHL that I follow with a passion. So I don't know. I think I'm still going to watch the playoffs, obviously. I'm going to watch all the way to the Stanley Cup more than likely. And I'll probably still have some more observations for you. But as the casual puck observer, that is what I have noticed so far in these Stanley Cup playoffs. All right, let's move on, shall we? The NFL draft. The NFL draft. Wow. It happened over this past weekend. I was going to make an episode to kind of preview it, but I don't love previewing the draft, to be honest with you, because one, I don't know nearly enough, especially in comparison to the amazing people that do a lot of the good draft previews, like the Mina Kimes, the Summer Sports crew and whatnot. Like, a lot of those people know a lot more of what they're talking about than I do. So I don't like to do that just because I don't want it to seem like I'm not necessarily butting heads, because I'm nowhere near those people, obviously. But there's so much better information than what I'm going to put out with when it comes to NFL draft analysis. So I don't like to preview it. I don't necessarily have any idea what anybody thinks, you know, what any other team is thinking or anything like that. I don't know. Previews are kind of weird for me, especially when it comes to draft stuff. But we can react, and that is what we are going to do. Let's start off with the biggest head scratcher that I can remember recently, and that is the Atlanta Falcons getting and making the pick of Michael Penix Jr. at 8 in the first round. I didn't understand this pick. This is a team that, for me, I talked about this a little bit before the draft. It wasn't, you know, in the preview or anything like that, but before that, like post season, when we were looking at the actual draft order and whatnot, I was talking about how this was a team to me that looked like they weren't that far away from at least competing for an NFC South division that, you know, over the past 5 years, well, I guess since Tom Brady retired now, but before Tom Brady even went to Tampa Bay, it has not been very strong. And I think Atlanta, if they were able to make the right moves, make the right picks in the draft, they could have very easily been competing in that division. And since they went and got Kirk Cousins, that increases their, obviously, ability at their most needed point at quarterback position. So they got their quarterback, seemingly, was what I thought. I was like, okay, got him. Perfect. They got the quarterback that they needed to at least compete for the division, maybe make some noise in the NFC playoffs if they got there. Their defense had been good enough for the most part to, I think, surprise people in during this past season. But this pick to me, and so going into this draft, I was like, okay, they probably need to get somebody up front, somebody on the line, maybe an edge rusher or something like that to provide some more attack on a four-man front, because one of the biggest things you need in the NFL in today's game is to be able to get to the quarterback with four pass rushers, not having to blitz people, because a lot of these quarterbacks in today's game, a lot of the best quarterbacks in today's game will beat you to death if you're trying to blitz them. That is just the fact of the game. Patrick Mahomes will pick you apart if you blitz him. Josh Allen will pick you apart if you blitz him. Jordan Love has been able to pick people apart if you blitz him. Like, you have to be able to go and get people, get quarterbacks with four pass rushers. Any more than that, and more than likely, unless it's not picked up properly, more than likely the quarterback, if he's good, if it's a good quarterback, they will pick you apart. And that is something that I thought the Falcons probably needed more than anything, was a pass rusher, an edge defender, something like that. So I thought a Dallas Turner of some kind would have been the pick for them, some sort of edge rusher. And they got Michael Penix, a quarterback. They just signed Kirk Cousins in the offseason to a staggering deal. 4 years, $180 million, $100 million of it guaranteed. So he's got a $25 million cap hit this year, and then into $40 million, $57.5 million over the next few years. And that was going to be their guy. That was going to be seemingly the guy that was going to, at the very least, help them compete for the division in the NFC South. Again, not a very strong division in the NFC South, something that they could have easily won with that move, I think, in my opinion, with the Kirk Cousins move, even if they didn't sign anybody else or draft anybody else, you know, that was of very good potential in that draft, which is seemingly what they did. But like, and again, I still think they're going to compete, but I think they would have had a good draft, got some real dogs up front on the defensive line or something like that. They could have possibly competed for the NFC. That's how close I think they were. I think they also needed a receiver if possible, get another guy outside of Drake London or Kyle Pitts at the tight end position, Drake London, the other wide receiver that they could throw in there and have a good 1-2-3 tandem. But they didn't do that. They took Michael Penix. And Michael Penix, I'm not bashing on Michael Penix by any means. I think he was a very good player for Washington, obviously. He's been playing for a long time. He started his career at Indiana, moved over to Washington over the past 2 years, I believe, really played out his entire career, his entire collegiate career. So he wasn't a bad player by any means. But with that being said, he's not necessarily young. He is coming off, not this past year, but he does have injury issues in his past. He has two ACL surgeries in his past, along with some other things, if I remember correctly, as well. And he's not exactly a hitch right off the beginning. You know, he's a project that you're going to have to work on. But that sort of stuff is not something that you do when you're close. With the move, you're getting two different messages from the front office of Atlanta. With the signing of Kirk Cousins, it's, hey, we're in a win now mode. We want to make us good enough right now to go and try to compete for the division, try to compete for the conference in the NFC if possible, and we're going to make the move to do that. And then come draft day, they're like, we're actually looking more long-term with the Michael Penix selection. We're like, okay, we're going to give ourselves time with Michael Penix and, you know, give us a couple years in order to try to develop him into a very good quarterback. People have been making the comparisons between Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers and whatnot, but that's not really the name of the game anymore. Having people just sit behind these starting quarterbacks and learn. It's more of now, you know, Patrick Mahomes was he sat behind Alex Smith, but then he immediately went in and then started winning. And it happened for Josh Allen. You don't really see that anymore. You get an idea of what you're getting out of a quarterback within the first two seasons. Maybe look what the Bears just did to Justin Fields. They said, okay, we know what we have. We're going to trade him for the next guy in the draft, the next number one overall pick in Caleb Williams. That is what we're doing. It gave him almost no time. Same thing with Kenny Pickett. The Steelers figured out what they had in Kenny Pickett in not very many games and said, okay, this isn't going to be good enough. We have to go get Justin Fields. Maybe we can develop Justin Fields into a better quarterback. And or they went and got Russell Wilson as well as maybe a fallback option or vice versa. Russell Wilson will start and then usher in Justin Fields as well. It's just not something that you see from quarterbacks anymore. If you're making a selection of quarterbacks, especially early on, it's with the expectation that he may need a little time to have to sit behind somebody, but it's going to be quick when you realize, okay, we're going to either slot him in within, you know, the first couple of games of this season or within next season. It's not going to be very long because you have to be able to capitalize on the rookie deals that you have with these quarterbacks and make the offseason moves in order to fit them around these rookie quarterbacks to fit with the contractual situations that you have with these quarterbacks. Because if not, then you're going to have to pay these quarterbacks, and that's when your roster really starts to kind of, you have to make these tough decisions. And the only team that's really been able to get away from it has been the Chiefs, obviously, and that deal with Patrick Mahomes is somehow probably going to be undervalued at some point. But for Michael Penix, with the deal that they just signed with Kirk Cousins, it doesn't really make any sense because you're seemingly, with the deal that Kirk Cousins has right now, it's 3 years of, you know, no out, essentially. You have a potential out coming up into 2027, which would bring in like $12.5 million of dead cap, but that's, you know, 3 years, $135 million into his contract. And, you know, there's some other stuff in there, but essentially that's when you're out. So you're talking about 3 years of Michael Penix essentially sitting behind Kirk Cousins. And that, to me, it's either sitting behind Kirk Cousins or Michael Penix comes in and then you just have a bunch of dead cap in your backup quarterback. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. You're getting two very different conversations from the front office of Atlanta. And again, this would have been a perfect opportunity for them. Like Latu was still on the board for them, that he ended up going to the Indianapolis Colts. Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle. You had Dallas Turner still on the board. Like, you had a ton of defensive power that would have put them in a perfect scenario to go out and fix their defense and make that a little bit better, get them the pass rusher that I thought they would have needed to compete for that division and really not necessarily round out that team. Again, still probably some holes at wide receiver. And to this point, I think the best wide receivers of the class had been taken. Anybody that they would have taken up to this point probably would have been reach, because you had Malik Nabers was already off the board. Marvin Harrison Jr. was already off the board. Adunze was taken at 9th, which was Adunze was still on the board. So they could have taken Adunze. I didn't realize that. That's a miss, obviously. Wow. I just realized Adunze was taken after them. So the Bears, who were after the Falcons, were like, okay, we're going to have to start looking in a different spot because Adunze is probably going to be taken. And then they see Adunze on the board after Washington, or after the Falcons take Penix. And they're like, huh? What are you doing? What are you doing here? What are you doing, Atlanta? I forgot about that. Anyways, so yeah. And then that kind of happened, that created more or less a domino effect, because the Vikings were always kind of set on JJ McCarthy. They didn't have to move up one spot in order to get him. But they were always kind of set on JJ McCarthy. It felt like he was always going to be going to the Minnesota Vikings, whether it meant that the Vikings were going to have to trade up all the way to like 5 or 6 in order to get him, or just kind of trade up one spot to get JJ McCarthy. I don't think anybody expected Michael Penix to go to Atlanta, at least this early on, or go this early on at all. I think he was still kind of a fringe day one, day two prospect, and a lot depending on who you were looking at and what, you know, analysis you were listening to. But the Michael Penix pick and then the JJ McCarthy pick afterwards kind of set in a domino effect, where then the Broncos kind of had to make a reaction pick, in my opinion. I think they probably always wanted Bo Nix to be their guy at quarterback position, but I thought maybe they were thinking that they could have waited at least until day two. But with Bo Nix seemingly being the last guy on the board there that had even remotely close to a day one grade from a lot of these places, they had to pick him early on. So they went and picked him at the 12th spot. Again, for me, that's probably a reach, but an understandable reach at that point. So, you know, at that point, again, he was probably the only one that was even close to having a day one grade outside of Penix and the guys that were selected early on. So they took Bo Nix. Again, maybe a slight reach, but an understandable reach at that point, because he was going to be the last one on the board for a while, it seemed like. So, yeah, just Atlanta doing some weird things that didn't make any sense to me. And we'll see what it ends up, you know, costing them, I guess. Maybe Michael Penix will come, but there's not a scenario in which I don't think they hurt themselves in this situation, because Michael Penix comes in, he plays he's very good. He ends up being a very, very good player for the Atlanta Falcons. But in the end, you're benching a guy that has a ton of money in dead cap that is going to cost you the ability to sign people in the offseason in those scenarios. So I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It didn't make any sense to me when they picked him. Didn't make any sense in the days following when they picked him. I just don't really know what they're doing in Atlanta. And we could, I guess, be proven wrong. But again, with the dead cap that you're going to be hit with, if for whatever reason Kirk Cousins is not playing as the starting quarterback in this situation and he's playing in the backup, you're hurting yourselves at that point too. So I don't know. It was confusing to me. And the Bears, man, I mean, you know, it's hard not to knock it at, say they knocked it out of the park, because you Caleb Williams, first pick, everybody expected it. But then to get Rome Odunze, like if you look at their wide receiver room now, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, and Rome Odunze, there's not many trios in the league that are better than that list right there, which is crazy. Coming into, right after the season had ended, we were like, man, the Bears are seemingly in a bad spot. It doesn't seem like they really have anybody. They're going to get Caleb Williams, but who they're going to surround him with? And Ryan Poles, the GM, has really made some moves that have created a seemingly a pretty electric offense in Chicago, what should be an electric offense in DJ Moore. DJ Moore was there during last season, obviously, but then going and getting Keenan Allen from L.A. And then now being able to pair Rome Odunze with Caleb Williams as well. And then they went and got DeAndre Swift as well. And the running back position, which may be an overpay there, but still probably better than what they had this previous year. So, you know, Chicago kind of immediately turns into a pretty substantial. And if this is all banked on the fact that both Adunze and Caleb Williams end up panning out, but seemingly really quickly turned around their offensive problems and kind of turned into a pretty decent offensive powerhouse. We'll have to see as the season comes along, but a lot of those guys on that team are producers. Like they've produced, you know, week in, week out. DJ Moore was very good last year. Keenan Allen's been doing it for 10 plus years now down in LA. So Chicago, watch out for Chicago. Watch out for the Chicago Bears. So yeah, just some quick observations from the NFL draft. It's crazy how many offensive people were going that early on. I think there was the first 14 picks were all offensive players. And then the 15th pick, Latu out of UCLA going to the Colts, kind of started a little bit of a flood of defensive players as well with it. Latu, the Byron Murphy, then Dallas Turner, and then Jared Verse. And then a couple other guys, Chop Robinson ended up going as well. A couple offensive linemen in between there, but a lot more defensive guys started falling off the list there as the end of the first round started going off. So yeah, just an odd NFL draft. Okay, let's wrap things up here with a quick NBA playoff reactions that we've had so far. Starting with kind of the big one from over the weekend, the Suns getting swept out of the playoffs by the Minnesota Timberwolves. I always thought the Timberwolves were probably the better team, but they got swept in the regular season by the Suns team. So people were kind of expecting, and I think I said previously in the NBA preview, the playoff preview, that there was an upset possibility here, especially with given the regular season sweep that the Suns had over the Timberwolves. There was definitely upset possibility, but man, the Suns going out pretty sad, just getting swept. That was their best punch in game four, that they kept it close. But all the other games did not feel relatively close, with Minnesota kind of just stomping on the Suns in those other games, games one, two, and three. And, now the Phoenix Suns have, a lot of questions. There is some real concern over the future of that team, especially with how it's constructed right now. If you look at a lot of their contract situation, they got a lot of the money tied up. Kevin Durant there, obviously, and he signed until the end of the 25-26 season. Bradley Beal, which that contract looks like it's going to be a mess for the future. Good luck getting rid of that contract. He's owed $53 million all the way through, $53 million next year. And then $57 million in 2026. That's a player option as well, so he can opt out, but he's not going to opt out of that situation, obviously. And then Devin Booker, who's still kind of the, I think going into the season, the future, they're going to build around Devin Booker. But now, with the money that you're tied up in with a lot of these guys and getting swept out of the first round, now you got to question a lot of it. They don't have any draft picks coming up in the next, basically the next 5 years, in the upcoming draft. They have their own 22nd in this upcoming draft, but after that, they don't have a 2025 pick at all. They don't have a first or a second. They get the least favorable pick between Phoenix, Orlando, and Washington in Memphis in 2026. They don't have a second rounder in 2026. Don't have a 2027 first round pick or second round pick. They don't have a 2028, or they do have a 2028 first round pick, but it's the least favorable of Phoenix and Philadelphia, and then no second round pick. And then 2029, no first round pick, no second round pick. And then 2030, least favorable, Phoenix, Washington, and Memphis, and then no second round pick. So they're a mess. I mean, they really, really do not have a lot of future to look forward to. Kevin Durant just came, it was reported, quote unquote, that Kevin Durant was not necessarily happy with his role in that offense this season in Phoenix. Bradley Beal dealing with injuries throughout this season from last season into this season as well. That's a big question mark. He's getting paid a ton of money, $57 million with that player option, obviously, in 2026 as well. Going into this upcoming next season, and this is before they make any changes, obviously. This is right after they lost, got swept. So there'll be there'll be $78 million negative in cap space going into next year. So not $78 million free of cap space. They are negative $78 million in cap space. They are over the cap minimum. So I don't know what the plan is for Phoenix. I would assume they're probably going to have to run it back, because unless maybe they can deal Kevin Durant at some point. But nobody's going to want that Bradley Beal contract over this past season because of the injury issues. Devin Booker, they're probably not going to deal Devin Booker either, just because they still, I think, kind of assume that he's going to be the future. They just had, they have Yusuf Nurkic as well under contract for a long time. A long time is probably a stretch, but $18 million this season, the next season, $19 million. And then an unrestricted free agent at the end of 2026-27 season. They just re-signed Grayson Allen to a long-term deal going into like 2030. So they've wrapped up a lot of guys, but a lot of those guys led to a first-round exit this season. And maybe they're thinking that they can bring him back. Maybe this wasn't an honest assessment because of the injury situation with Bradley Beal. They just never were able to mesh together, but I'm getting a lot of the same vibes that I got from Brooklyn when Kevin Durant was in Brooklyn with James Harden and Kyrie Irving. That one was a little bit more of bumping heads, but even, you know, as we head into this first day of the offseason for the Suns, we're already hearing Kevin Durant say he did not love the way that offense was constructed around them, and he didn't feel that he loved his situation that he was in. So I don't know what the Suns are going to do. The Suns are in a mess right now. With the construction of the team that they have now, getting swept out of the first round is not acceptable, and they obviously have to make some sort of changes, and I don't know what that looks like. If they still keep the same core, maybe deal some of the other guys that are around them, but I don't know. I mean, still, they have massive cap hits even with that. Like, just those three guys in Beal, Booker, and Durant take up like nearly $170 million, $165 million in cap space by themselves going into next year. So I just don't know how you fix it if you're the Suns, unless you're trading away one of those guys. But Beal's not going to get traded because that contract is too much. I don't think anybody's going to want that contract. Durant, maybe. But again, he's 36 years old, if I remember correctly, 37 years old. 36 years old going into next season. He'll be turning 37 next season, and he's signed on, going to make $54 million going into next season as well. And then after that, you got Devin Booker, who probably the biggest asset that you have at that point. It's still 28 years old, probably a lot of basketball to play still left. But again, huge contract that you're going to be taking there as well, and a very ball dominant guard. So you have to know what you're looking for. And I don't know. I don't know what the Suns are going to do. And they definitely need to find a way to get a lot of their picks back, or more picks from certain suitors if possible, because they, again, their own 22nd first round pick here this year, and then essentially no picks or no favorable picks going into the next 5 years, all the way to 2030. Essentially no second round picks whatsoever going to 2030. So the Suns get swept out, and now the future is very questionable. Very questionable for the Phoenix Suns. The 76ers and the Knicks series, one of the more entertaining series that we have, just in terms of bravado on the outside. You know, it's Knicks, Philadelphia fans, you know, they don't love each other. That East Coast rivalry is what I should say. And Joel Embiid still seemingly dealing with a nagging leg injury that he came back maybe a little bit early from, but then diagnosed with Bell's palsy during game three, if I remember correctly. And that's something to pay attention to. If you have Bell's palsy, you are not healthy. You're not well. I don't know what the underlying symptoms are for Bell's palsy, but other than the fact that we could see him during the game, like one side of his face is just not working like the rest of his face, that's not great. The fact that he's playing through that is absolutely insane. Not to mention they're down 3-1 and they're going back to New York to the Knicks, seemingly looking to finish off the series tomorrow in New York as well. And that place is going to be rowdy. It is going to be very, very loud in New York for game five, because this is going to be the Knicks' first chance to win an actual series, like have a series winning game in New York since the conference semifinals in 1998-1999, when they swept the Hawks in the conference semis. And, you know, obviously they've won a couple series since then. They won an opening round series against the Celtics in 2012, and then last year against the Cavs. But this is the first time to clinch a series at home since 1998, 1999. So it's been a long time since the fans of the Garden have seen a game in which the Knicks have clinched it to move on to the next round. It's been a long time. That's 1998, 1999. I would have been 1-2 years old, essentially. So the Knicks fans have not seen it in a long time. So that place is going to be rowdy. They're going to want to see that series clinched in game five in New York for the first time since then. A lot of those players probably weren't even born yet. Like Jalen Brunson, I don't think had been born yet to that point. A lot of those other guys as well, those young guys, probably had not been born yet. Like Dante DiVincenzo probably hadn't been born yet. Josh Hart probably hadn't been born yet either. So a lot of those guys probably looking to win their first series in New York City since 1998, 1999. So that place is going to be rowdy. That place is going to be very, very loud. And then the Lakers Nuggets, that game's coming up as well. The Lakers staved off elimination, beating the Nuggets for the first time since, and this is insane to me, beating the Nuggets for the first time since December 16th, 2022. That was basically two years ago. A year and a half ago, I guess. Then the Lakers had beat them the Nuggets had been beating the Lakers. They swept them last year, 1-3 to start. So probably like 10 times or something in a row. It's funny to me because we used to look at LeBron James and those Cavs team, and LeBron James in general used to do this. But the Toronto teams in like the mid 2010s, and the Toronto teams were all very, very good up until that point. Like DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, those were pretty solid teams. But they always ran into LeBron James, and LeBron James would always knock them out of the playoffs. Just no matter how good that Toronto team got, for whatever reason, whenever they ran into a LeBron James-led team, between whether it be the Heat or the Cavs or whatever, the Heat or LeBron James would knock them out. The Heat or the Cavs would knock them out of the playoffs. And now, seemingly, the Nuggets have essentially done that to LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, no matter what LeBron James puts around him, at this point, they're going to run into the Denver Nuggets before they even get to the Western Conference Finals or whatever, and the Nuggets are going to knock them out. And it's just kind of funny how that's the role reversal in that one seemingly has happened. So Nuggets looking to close that series out as well. They've looked very good. A little bit worrisome that they have not led for like a large majority of the series. The Lakers have, for the most part, up until like the start of the second half, really, and into like the fourth quarter, have kind of dominated the series just in terms of a points perspective. And then the Nuggets have been able to race back and win in buzzer beating fashion, or kind of just, you know, dominate the second half or what have you. Because the Lakers, I think, have led this series, or led this just like in terms of lead, have led this series for like 152 minutes or something ridiculous like that. Versus like the Nuggets, who've led for something closer to like 47, 48 minutes total. And the fact that the Nuggets are leading 3-1 is insane. Maybe a tad bit worrisome, maybe playing a little bit more relaxed, you know, maybe that the championship hangover type of thing of the playoffs, of the opening round of the playoffs for them, but still leading 3-1. So you can't really complain about that if you are the Nuggets, but maybe a little bit. They're going to run into better teams, obviously, than the Lakers in this first round. They're going to have to go play against Minnesota, who just dominated the Phoenix Suns in that first round matchup. So they're going to have to correct that a little bit, I think. And Minnesota's defense is a lot better than the Lakers, and Minnesota's defense is not going to let the Nuggets just kind of crawl back at will in those games. So that is something to kind of maybe keep an eye on for the Nuggets. Because that is a tad bit worrisome, in my opinion. But still, I think they're going to get it done against the Lakers. I don't think they're going to allow the Lakers to come back. I think they probably win it in five in Denver, and then go on to face the Minnesota Timberwolves in round two. And that's going to make a very, very interesting series between the Nuggets and the T-Wolves. So we'll see what happens. Good set of playoff games so far that we've seen. The Heat as well with the Celtics, kind of maybe a little bit of a... One, the Celtics exercising demons from the Miami Heat. The team has caused them pain for 10 years now. And the Celtics looking to exercise those demons, seemingly. And the Heat, you know, just being an 8 seed, possibly, hey, we're going to upset you again. We're gonna try to make a run again. They don't have Jimmy Butler, obviously, but good enough of an offense and defense. And Eric Spoelstra being probably the best coach in the league right now, looking to try to create that magic that allows them to get back into the finals, move on to the next round again, and beat a Goliath in the Boston Celtics. But again, Celtics up 2-1, and that series goes on in Miami now, and seemingly we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I still think the Celtics are going to win that series. But again, you get still a little bit nervous about Boston. You can't help but be a little bit nervous for Boston just because of what we've seen from them over the past few years in the playoffs with this core that they have. They did make some moves, obviously, in the offseason, getting rid of Marcus Smart and bringing in Drew Holiday, the championship experience and whatnot, getting Kristaps Porzingis down low. So, you know, different team now, but still, you can't help but think about the demons that they have in the closet, you know, they kind of brushed away. We'll see what happens. But yeah, for the most part, been entertaining playoffs for the NBA. A good playoffs all around. NHL, NBA, the draft for the NFL was entertaining, to say the least, head-scratching, more of a blow-up Twitter moment, if you will. So yeah, that's it. We're done. We're done with the show. I want to thank you very much for everybody who tuned in. Appreciate it very much. Please remember to leave a rating, if you don't mind, on all the popular podcasting platforms. We'll be back again here pretty soon. So thank you very much for tuning in. You've been listening to the Weekend Sports Rap Podcast, and I have been your host, James Timberlake.